It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host Veronica Rickert is off today. Coming up, state parks will have free admission this weekend, plus there's free fishing and more around the state. We want to hear about your favorite state parks and other outdoor recreation. First, the UW system has been one of the most controversial parts of the state budget this time around. The latest step from the Joint Finance Committee, a cut of $250 million system-wide. That's instead of the $300 million proposed by the governor. And an end to state laws on things like tenure and shared governance. Our next guest is waving the caution flag for lawmakers. In a recent opinion piece, he says the UW-Madison has built up a world-class reputation for more than a century to the benefit of the state as a whole, and major changes, he's worried, could put an end to that. John Wiley is a former chancellor at UW-Madison. He joins us here in the studio. John, thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
So you write that when people from outside of the state think of Wisconsin, they think of three things: the cheese, the Packers, and UW-Madison. Why does the university have that kind of recognition?
Well, I can't really answer that, but I spent a lot of time during my years in administration traveling around the country, visiting with alumni groups and with other people, foundations and donors and people from around the country. And it was very clear that there weren't many things they knew about Wisconsin except those three.
So for a lot of people maybe in the state who didn't go to UW-Madison, who didn't send their kids here, they might think, yeah, okay, nice that we have that reputation. How does that help me? What's the benefit for the state as a whole of having this prominent university on the world stage?
Well, there are a lot of benefits. Directly, economically, one of the things we've done here in Madison is build up our research park, which now is home to nearly 120 companies, pays millions of dollars a year in property taxes to the city. That we did by our own bootstraps. We had no help from the city, the county, or the state to do that. We had help from MG&E, and we sold some land to CUNA to get it started, but now it's generating revenue back to the university. So that's one example. We've spun out way more than 300 companies that are employing thousands of people around the state. We're a source of innovation and new companies. Those are direct, dollar for dollar, in fact, many dollars per dollar, return to the on investment for the state taxpayers.
So looking back at the history a little bit, you raised the question, how did little Wisconsin end up in such elite company in terms of universities? We're, in boxing terms, punching above our weight, I think they say. How did we get from the 19th century to now with this elite institution?
Well, Rob, I spent a lot of time thinking about that, and you don't have enough time for me to explain it in great detail, but I will tell you that one advantage was starting in 1848. So we're old by U.S. university standards. Getting an early start was a big help. Secondly, right from the get-go, in the state law, it was the rules of governance of the institution were written down. And we were able to attract the very best faculty from the very beginning of the university. We got the best in the world. Academic administrators have a saying, because faculty hire each other, departments hire their colleagues. We say A faculty hire other A's, whereas B faculty hire C's. If you think about that, that's either a prescription to stay on top, or it's a prescription to spiral downward. And it can work both ways. So we got an early start with absolutely superb faculty, and they have insisted on hiring nothing else but superb colleagues. And I'm very worried that if we eliminate tenure and shared governance, and it isn't just faculty governance, it's shared governance. We written into the statutes was a role for the academic staff and the classified staff and the students. And I'll tell you, from experience, there is no chancellor, and that certainly includes me, smart enough to make all the right decisions without consulting with the faculty, the academic staff, the classified staff, and the students. You really need to take all those viewpoints into account when making important decisions.
Talking to former chancellor of UW-Madison, John Wiley, looking at a little bit about the history of UW-Madison and his concerns over the current budget process, what could change. He thinks it'll jeopardize the reputation, the quality of UW-Madison. Let's dig into those concerns a little more. Why is shared governance? Why is tenure so important? Because a lot of people think, my workplace doesn't have that. So most workplaces don't have that. What is it about universities that make that kind of governance and something like tenure so relevant and important? As
well,
you
say? I'll answer the question I'm sure you're asking first, and then I'll answer the question that is really behind it. It's very important for faculty to be free to pursue wherever their research takes them. The establishment of academic freedom in U.S. universities traces back to the late 1800s and Wisconsin, when the legislature ordered the regents to fire Professor Richard Ely on the grounds that he was teaching socialism. As a matter of fact, he was opposed to socialism. He was not teaching socialism. He was teaching about the labor movement, which was a hot topic then. But they ordered the regents to fire him, and the regents did an investigation and then announced to the legislature that not only are we not going to fire him, we're going to reaffirm his right to do what he's doing. And they issued the famous sifting and winnowing statement that I believe was written by President Charles Van Hise at the time. You know, the one that's on the front of Bascom Hall and that probably most students can quote directly. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of academic freedom. Faculty need to be able to do and say controversial things in order to do their work. And they need to do it in the secure knowledge that they won't be fired just because someone doesn't like what they're saying. So that was the fundamental reason for establishing tenure in the first place. As it's evolved, though, that's not the most important thing that it does. Most faculty that I know couldn't care less about job security. They just don't care because they are such hot commodities on the job market. They can leave overnight and get an equally good job at higher pay at an equally good university. So it doesn't matter to them. But what does matter is picking really great colleagues. And when you vote to promote someone to tenure, that's a very consequential decision. You take it seriously. You spend a lot of time examining their work, examining them, and making sure that this is someone you want as a faculty colleague for the rest of your career. If you could hire someone that could be fired next week, you wouldn't take it seriously. You just say, well, it doesn't matter. If we don't like what they're doing, we'll just fire them. That's why tenure is important.
There's been concern before this budget cycle about faculty poaching from the UW-Madison. Big names going elsewhere where they have more that they can offer. And there's concern we've heard from professors saying, hey, maybe I'm going to pack up and leave now. Are you worried if these changes stand as written right now that we'll see a small or even major exodus of faculty away?
Of course I'm worried about it. I always worried about it. All the time I was chancellor, before that even. It's always something to worry about because it's an open market out there, and it's a very ferociously competitive market. We hire from the best schools in the world, and they hire from us, and it goes on all the time. But right now, we look vulnerable to the rest of the country, and I think there is a lot of poaching being attempted. And I've heard from a number of faculty who have told me in emails in the last few days that they're thinking about looking around, because Wisconsin's environment just does not seem compatible with their career anymore. That's a very worrying situation to be in.
Now, one of the arguments we've seen lately in favor of some form of changes to the way the university is run, whether it's a public authority as originally proposed by the governor or these changes we're talking about now, is that management needs more flexibility in this day and age, whether we're talking about the chancellors or of the various schools, the director of the system, the regents. Do you see any case to be made? You used to be the boss in this position. Was there flexibility that would have made your job easier, made you more able to improve the university?
Absolutely. But it has nothing to do with tenure or any of the changes that are being proposed. I mean, we chafe under a lot of the rules that are imposed by the State Department of Administration. Personnel rules, sometimes. Building and construction rules. All sorts of rules and regulations. One time I flowcharted the process to change a person's title, to upgrade their title of their job. It was 30 pages long. And there was a box at the bottom that said, if you've gotten this far and more than 3 years have elapsed, start over. Now that is an unruly process. Building and construction, we spend twice as much money and twice as long as anybody in the private sector would spend building a new building. There are all kinds of efficiencies to be realized there. None of that has anything to do with tenure or with the authority of chancellors to fire faculty. None of it.
And we've made it this far, and I haven't actually asked you about the budget cut, currently standing at $250 million for the system as a whole. UW-Madison will own a part of those cuts, certainly. They've seen, the system has seen cuts on that scale before. Is this something, a straw that breaks the camel's back, as you see it?
Well, we'll find out, won't we? I'll tell you what worries me most about it is tuition. When I went to school back in the 60s, okay, it's a long time ago, it's before you were born, tuition as a rule of thumb around the country at public universities, state universities, was between 1% and 2% of median family income. My dad made $10,000 a year at the peak of his career as a pharmacist. My tuition as an undergraduate was $125 a year. Today, our tuition at UW-Madison is $9,000. That's about 1.5% of $750,000. How many families do you know that make that much money? We are freezing pretty much everybody out of the option to get a college education at all. That is outrageous. That is disastrously bad public policy, and we keep doing it year after year. This is not the first big budget cut UW-Madison has had, or the university system has had. It's the fifth out of the last six biennia, and it ties the biggest one we ever had before. So there comes a point when it is the straw that breaks the camel's back. I don't know where that is. I know that the state, when I first came here in 1975 on the faculty, the state was providing something like a third to 40% of our budget. It's now down, if you take out the part that never even touches our coffers, the part that's debt service and so on, take that out, the state is providing less than 10% of our budget. The biggest single chunk is federal. Second biggest is gifts and grants from alumni and foundations. The third biggest is program revenue, which is money we get for selling things like dormitory space, football tickets, and so on. The next is tuition, and the smallest is the state. In what sense will we be a state university when that gets down to near zero?
Now, you wrote this piece. It's available on Madison.com, presumably because you hope somebody's going to listen. Do you think that the Republicans in the legislature who are running the budget show right now are going to listen, are going to change any of these things?
Some of them do. I know I have a reputation for being rather combative. A lot of people who have written letters to the editor have said, yeah, this is just Wiley sounding off again. I speak my mind. I'm pretty candid and blunt. I admit that. Not always very politically or diplomatically sensitive. But I always found the legislature to be just as varied as the rest of society. Some people would not listen. They had their minds made up, and there was nothing you could say that would educate them or inform them or in any way change their opinions. Others listened very carefully and said, well, you make a good point. We'll see what we can do about that. And that goes for both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democrat. So many of them were very reasonable to deal with, and I think many of them will listen to reasoned arguments now in this environment. Maybe we can still make some changes in the magnitude of the cut and in the governance changes, which I think are even more disastrous than the dollar cut. But it remains to be seen. We'll see how it goes.
John, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was John Wiley, former chancellor at UW-Madison, talking about the state budget and changes to higher education. Coming up, it's free fun weekend this Saturday and Sunday, a chance to get outside in nature. After the long winter, try out a new Wisconsin State Parker Trail for free. We're asking you to call in now. What is your favorite state park? Where do you go every year as a family, to camp or fish? Call us with your favorite state park or trail at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.